This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
After me. With this ring.
With this ring.
I thee wed.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of With This Ring. I'm Ryan Everett.
I'm Cindy Everett.
And today, when we're actually recording this, we'll be topical. It might not be topical when this airs, but we are looking at Survivor Series.
It's topical because we're recording it on Survivor Series Eve.
Yes.
NXT War Games
yes.
Eve.
We're the first of 4 nights in Chicago, and I will be attending 2 of the nights, and it will be...
I will be attending NXT War Games.
Yes. So
looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think it should be good. It's 2 War Games matches, so that'll take up the bulk of the event.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of cage matches. All right, so Survivor Series. Before we got into this, what did you know about it?
Really nothing.
Nothing?
I feel like of all the majors, you know, SummerSlam, WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, this is one I definitely had the least exposure to.
Yeah.
It's also maybe the least intuitive concept. I mean, Royal Rumble makes sense.
I feel
like this one you had explained to me more than once before I kind of figured out exactly what was going on, especially
right.
with War Games. It was a little bit more elaborate.
Yeah, well... War Games, like we talked with War Games, that's just something they've started doing in the last 3 years now for NXT only.
Okay.
So, Survivor Series itself, so there was WrestleMania, obviously.
Right.
That's the first one. And then in 1987, Jim Crockett Promotions, which eventually became WCW, kind of was WCW at that point, but eventually they'd become the... But they decided, hey, WWF's doing all this... business with pay-per-views, we should get in on that. And their biggest show, they started in 1983 having Starrcade on Thanksgiving night.
Mm.
And they do it in Greensboro. That was like
their hub.
And then they'd also, eventually in 1985, they did half in Greensboro, half in Atlanta.
Was it on Thanksgiving?
That was Christmas, Thanksgiving, those New Year's were like big days for wrestling back then.
Hmm.
Like, people would eat.
It's kind of depressing.
I think people would eat dinner at like 2 in the afternoon and then
go
out to the wrestling shows. So 1987, they decided we're going to get into the pay-per-view business. We're going to do it with our biggest show, Starrcade, and we're going to do it on Thanksgiving. And to show that we're a national promotion, we're not going to do it in our faithful home of Greensboro where we always sell out. We're going to go to Chicago.
Oh.
So they did it in Chicago, which the fans were different in Chicago.
But what year was this again?
1987. This was the first time they tried to do it on pay-per-view.
Gotcha.
So okay. The fans were in Chicago were different than in Greensboro, and they actually cheered for like Ric Flair and.
Oh.
And also, Vince McMahon heard they were doing this and went to the cable companies and said, "I just created my own November pay-per-view called Survivor Series, and if you air." Starrcade, you won't be able to air WrestleMania.
Oh.
So.
Cold-hearted businessman.
So Starrcade was, or WCW was like, well, okay, we'll move the start time to 2 p.m.
On Thanksgiving. Oh, that's terrible.
And then, like, the pay-per-view companies were like, oh, this is great. We'll have 2 to 5 for
Starrcade
and then, like, 7 to 10 for Survivor Series. Vince McMahon was like, no. If you carry Starrcade at all.
Wow.
So. Eventually, like, out of, I think it was like about 10% of the cable companies in America decided to carry Starrcade.
Oh, wow.
So they did not do well at all carrying it.
Yeah, it was actually, that was my first question I had in my notes, was who came up with this concept? So it was Vince McMahon?
Well,
or he was the one that just
kind of... He was the one, they kind of, earlier in 87, they had started doing like 3-on-3 elimination tag matches. And I think they just kind of were trying to figure out what to do with it eventually. And this was, they needed, because back then pay-per-views really needed like a hook.
Okay.
Outside of WrestleMania. And even then, it was like all these big matches that led to it. So this was kind of a way to get everyone involved.
Gotcha.
And they have a cohesive idea.
Mm-hmm.
And this is coming off WrestleMania 3. And this was the first time Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan would lock horns since then.
Okay. Yeah, because they weren't in the Survivor Series, but they still...
Well, they were in the main event.
Right. The main event of that event.
Right.
Those redundant?
Okay. Yes. So, the first match we watched was, we went to the first show itself, 1987, and most of the matches were 5-on-5.
This one was a lot of guys,
10-on-10. This is 10-on-10.
That was a lot of people.
It was, and they didn't really understand how to work the camera yet, so their first... So there's about three eliminations, you can't even really see what's going on.
Right, especially since there's so many of them, they basically line the
cover
entire
the
ring.
Yes. Yeah, so it's the British Bulldogs, the Killer Bees, the Fabulous Rougeaus, Strike Force, and the Young Stallions with your boyfriend Paul Roma.
Yeah.
Against.
Gotta get a good view of his posterior.
The Bolsheviks, Demolition, the Dream Team, the Heart Foundation, and the Islanders. And, okay. And everyone on the heel team had a manager, so that was even five more guys that would be down there. And the face team, as you pointed out, were. Completely in sequence.
Oh, yeah.
Except for Strike Force, the tag champs themselves, who came out with their sweet windbreakers.
Right, yeah. I don't think they had an official name, so I put Sequence versus Bad Guys.
Yeah, that would be, that's correct. And it went 37 minutes, the longest match on the card.
How long was it? Sorry.
37 minutes.
37 minutes, okay.
And, yeah, I mean, a lot of quick eliminations and... Like Smash from Demolition, they were like the new hot team. So he ends up getting disqualified by the ref for throwing him across the ring.
That's right.
So that kind of keeps their aura up. It doesn't hurt them at all because it just shows that they care about beating people up more than anything.
Right. And this is also the Bolsheviks got eliminated pretty much right away.
Right. Yeah. They go out a minute and a half into the match.
Okay.
And they were, because they were by far the lowest rung tag team, especially on the heel side.
Is there a formula to it? Like, it's the lowest rung heel?
Usually, it is kind of like...
Because I noticed...
The low heel, the low face.
Yeah.
But actually, this match, it's kind of funny, because the Killer Bees and Young Stallions, who end up being the survivors, they're kind of like... Out of the faces, they'd probably be the lowest and second lowest, really, at this time, especially. Because, yeah, I mean, maybe the Rougeaus are right there. Because the Bulldogs were former tag champs, and Strikeforce were the tag champs at the time. So those were the two highest for sure. And Strikeforce and the Killer Bees were pretty low on the rung. But I guess they just kind of wanted to give off the shock that anyone could win these matches.
Yeah,
the right
it was interesting, too, that they had almost like they had two winner teams, basically, instead of letting one team.
Right, yeah. Well, that's... I think in this show, the first match had three survivors. The second match had two survivors, and this had two survivors. Two teams. And then the final match had one survivor.
Okay.
Andre the Giant.
Makes sense.
But then he got attacked by Hulk Hogan because the show had to end with Hulk Hogan posing, obviously.
Right. Wouldn't be the 80s without...
Of course not. Hogan must pose. That's another podcast... Makes t-shirts for that.
Oh, nice.
Because that's what Vince McMahon would always say at the end of shows. No matter what, how it ends, Hogan must pose.
Oh, interesting. So your funeral, is Hogan going to come out and pose?
Of course. Well, yeah. I mean, he must.
Yeah, that's how it ends. Probably at Vince McMahon's funeral.
Yes, I'm sure. Well, Vince McMahon will outlive us all.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. So where did this match take place?
Oh, it took place at the Richfield Coliseum in Richfield, Ohio.
Yes.
Which no one really knows where that is. It's
suburban Cleveland, as Jesse the Body Ventura.
Yeah, it's in kind of no man's land between Cleveland and Akron. Wikipedia said it was stationed there because on good weather, 5 million Ohioans could get there within an hour. So they're trying to kind of be a little strategically placed. However, it wasn't really close to like a major intersection. There was just one kind of two-lane road that went in and out. I went there for Disney and Ice, I think, with Girl Scouts back in the day, so I don't really remember the logistics. But Larry Bird did say that it was his favorite arena to play in.
Oh,
so that he didn't say why, or the article I read didn't say why, but
got that. The Cavs were kind of good then, so it's not like because he won every game that he played there. Maybe he did, I don't know what I would think. So it's not like by an airport or anything.
No, it's not like, really by anything.
Because like Allstate Arena is always kind of weird in Chicago. Because it's in suburban Chicago, but then you realize it's right next to O'Hare Airport, so it makes sense travel-wise.
Right, no, yeah, it wasn't really close to anything. It was one of those things where they were trying to, like, put it in the middle, and it ended up really not serving either market.
Not serving anyone.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, that's Cleveland municipal planning for you, it seems. A lot of stuff.
Right, that's our motto. Let's go right in the middle, and it'll make anybody happy.
So, real quick, looking at these teams, just first glance, or some of these, it's a second or third glance of them. The Bolsheviks, what did you think of them?
I barely remember them.
All right, they're the Russian.
I know,
team.
I know.
They were saying the, well,
they were out first. So, yeah, and honestly, I think I had my notes. Russian national anthem. Right, and I had my notes too. There was a lot of teams that I had only seen for the first time.
Right.
That was my first time seeing the Bolsheviks, the Killer Bees, the Stallions, the Rougeaus. So it just, maybe for me, it didn't really relate to it.
Right. Yeah,
it was really chaotic too. You could kind of tell it was the first one.
And this was a change for a lot. Like the Rougeaus soon turned heel, like as pretty boy heels, instead of what they were kind of here, just like faceless good guys.
Right.
And then Demolition eventually would, within 6 months, be the tag champs and be like the top of the heap. Strike Force were the tag champs here, and they'd lose to Demolition at WrestleMania. The Dream Team was Greg Valentine and Dino Bravo. They would break up like, this was probably their last match as a tag team.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was my first time seeing them, too.
Both of those guys would be singles wrestlers. The Greg Valentine, actually.
Is he the Hammer?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was an IC champ for a long time earlier in the 80s, and then he kind of got a renewed push after this. So he's actually going to pop up in some of my matches in singles action before this. And then the Hart Foundation.
Right, and I had seen them.
Them because of
the Total Divas.
And Natalya crying about Jim Neidhart. And before Jim Neidhart died, she made it seem like Bret Hart was her dad.
A little bit, yeah.
And then Tama, the Islanders.
And Haku.
Yeah, Haku.
Yeah, I remember Haku from the other match that we watched, but I'd never seen the other guy.
Yeah, Tama was... He started when he was like 20 in the WWF, and he was only 22 or 23
here.
He did
look really young, yeah.
And he like was positioned to be big, but he had some... those demons that they always talk about in the wrestling business.
What do you mean?
Like drugs and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And that kind of halted his... push. But of course Jesse Ventura comes up big here with the racism about the South.
Oh yeah,
these South Pacific boys, they grow
heads. That was
they're strong here. I got it. I actually wrote that down because it's always one of my favorite. Jesse,
you do quote that a lot. This was airing today on
the South Sea Island boys. They got stamina, they got strength, and they got hard heads.
Yep. Yeah.
And also I wrote that you mentioned a few times that Paul Roma had a good ass.
I did mention that a couple times. He did.
Yes, and I'm sure if you asked Paul Roma, he would agree because he's very complimentary of himself. Oh. Thinks he had a much bigger stand in the WWF then.
I didn't like him for his wrestling talent, so, you know. But, no, I think that's pretty much all I had to say. I didn't really understand the part at the end with the masks.
Yeah, so it was
a little, like, the whole thing was just a little
It worked
weird.
Kind of better when they would do it in a regular tag match where the ref wouldn't notice that the illegal guy came in because at the very, like, last 30 seconds of the match, they would both put the mask on. So then the illegal guy would come in and pin the other guy.
Like, what's the point? If it's still one guy in there, does it matter?
Well, it's the illegal person.
Okay.
So you didn't tag him legally. You can't technically legally pin the guy.
Yeah, but, I mean, all these matches, like, everyone runs in. Actually, this one, was there a big run-in?
Not
I don't
really.
Think so. This is 20 people to be a
run-in.
Yeah,
the Survivor Series, it's kind of weird until maybe it's, like, the end. There's not a lot of guys. There could be four guys standing on the ringside, but they won't come in to break up another guy's pin, which is just kind of... It's one of those things that just becomes a rule because to help the match work the way it's supposed to.
Gotcha. Okay. So where does this rank for you?
Looking where I have it, I think.
So you already have like your preliminary?
No, just I have it at 9 out of 10. So that'll be like probably top 50, maybe right around like the number 50 spot. They're right around the middle spot because then they had a match the same match the next year, and it's basically the same people. There's like three teams that switch in and out, but it's kind of the 88 one. I think is revered more, but I think this is actually better than this one. So this will make it 88 probably might make it towards the very end.
Okay, yeah, we don't watch the 88 one.
No,
second, I don't know what you're talking about.
The 88 one, it's good, but then the end is like a lot of storyline stuff. So I figured this was better just to. Nuts and bolts.
Yeah, kind of got the gist of it. It was it's really, you know, different pace.
Yes. Because
they're tapping in and out really fast. There's really short sequences.
Right.
It took me a little bit of time to get used to. I think for this week, this might go kind of near the bottom.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Because then the next three Survivor Series matches we had. We skipped all the way from 1987 to 2001.
Yep.
Now, I don't want you to get the wrong idea. 1988, 1989, and 1990 Survivor Series are three of my favorite all-time cards.
Okay.
But, like, I could sit and watch those over most of the things that we watched, but none of the matches are really that great on them. It's all kind of like...
So why is it your favorite if none of them are that good?
Because it's just so nostalgic.
Oh, okay.
Like, I know I've...
Like, the reason why I watched, like, Troop Beverly Hills and, like, other bad movies.
Right, yeah, exactly. That's why we'll be watching plenty of bad movies on Disney Plus.
Oh, man, yeah. Like, all, like, the like Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
I
sure
still think that's
terrible.
Something you made up, but...
You found it on there.
Well, you can find plenty of stuff on there.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's
yeah.
real.
Okay, that's fair.
But anyways, we skip ahead to 2001. Team WWF versus Team Alliance.
AKA, like, WCW.
And ECW.
Yeah, yes. Kind of the outsiders.
And so it's Team WWF is Chris Jericho, The Big Show, Kane, The Rock, and The Undertaker against The Alliance, Booker T, Rob Van Dam, and that basically ends it for people who actually came in during this time, and then Shane McMahon, Kurt Angle, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. So this was the end of a storyline that for so long looked like the easiest thing to do. You have... Like, for years in the 90s, it was like, oh, if they ever could do WCW versus WWF. And then Vince McMahon bought WCW, and it didn't work out that way. It was just such a botched angle from the get-go. And the whole thing was, and it continues really to this day, when they bring someone in, they always have them lose to start so that they don't, like, think too big of themselves. And they did that here, but that just kind of... So already coming in, WCW had the stink of being the losers.
Right.
And then they come in and lose all their big matches. And the only reason they win any matches eventually is because Steve Austin defects to them. So it was kind of a mess, but it makes up for it with having this match.
Okay.
And I think I will say this is the best Survivor Series match ever.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yes. I think just especially the beginning's fun where they have everyone, like everyone does their finisher to Big Show to get him out. Then everyone does their finisher to Shane McMahon to kill him.
Right. Yeah. Shane was annoying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He kept every time someone would get an advantage, he'd come in and run in.
Yeah. I know that was the point of him to be annoying, but he succeeded.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I didn't like how Undertaker had, like, a different entrance and Steve Austin had different music.
It yeah, Steve Austin's music
had a weird
was
feel
bad.
To it.
Yeah, and this is Biker Taker period.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's different for sure. I didn't. I thought it was. It's good to have that every once in a while. Like, he changed up his look after 10 years, so he had enough That's time, fair. And it was. Yeah, but yeah, Steve Austin's music change. That was bad. That was one of the things that, like, you don't need to change everyone's music
right
all the time, and they thought they needed to. So, like I said, Big Show and Shane go out right away. Then it's Kane and Undertaker. Then it's RVD and Booker. And then I think where it gets really great is when you basically have a tag team match between Jericho and The Rock against Kurt Angle and Steve Austin. For really the last, let's see, it's basically the last 20 minutes, it's those four guys.
Yeah, I kind of feel like other than that first one, these kind of thinned out. I mean, they got rid of the scrubs relatively quickly.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, these were all, like, Kane, Undertaker, Booker, and Rob Van Dam were, like, just on the cusp of the main event. And then Big Show and Shane weren't really
there. They're kind of filler
people. Yeah.
I liked all of Rod Van Dam's little flips. Very, yes. Very acrobatic.
Yes. And then...
Was he a gymnast in his former career or something?
I don't think he was a... I think he just kind of always knew that being athletic was a way that he could stand out.
Yeah. Well, it worked.
Yeah.
Although I will say when we watched the next one, like, I saw a lot of the same moves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So his repertoire was relatively limited.
That's the problem with him. The first time you see him, you think he's... great, and then
it's
diminishing returns.
Yeah. But this one, I like Paul Heyman's commentary.
Yeah,
on this one, he was really funny.
Paul Heyman commentary is great, especially it was. Unfortunately, this is the last night him and JR would do commentary together because he gets fired the next night because he was part of the Alliance.
Got it.
And Jerry Lawler made his comeback, and
great.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the downfall of
of commentary.
Commentary, really, but yeah, I think. Especially, like I said, the last 20 minutes, and actually it's surprising because Kurt Angle gets eliminated first, so Steve Austin has to go it alone, and even though he's the heel, he stands in there and fights and eliminates Chris Jericho.
Yep.
And then towards the end, he actually has The Rock beaten, but he already attacked the ref. And then Kurt Angle comes out and hits The Rock hits Austin with the belt, and then The Rock gets the win. And of course, as any show should end, it ends with Vince celebrating.
Right. Yeah.
Top of the ramp.
Yeah, this is also the one where the Undertaker had someone in every corner, and he was like ping ponging
off
of all
of
them.
Yeah,
I like that part.
Clotheslines to every corner.
But no, yeah, this one was pretty good. A lot more cohesive than the last one. It's still pretty fast paced. I don't know if I ever really got fully used to. Changing over so much, but I think when they got the scrubs out and just having four people wrestle for 20 minutes is okay.
Yeah
and
that's a lot more digestible.
And the Greensboro Coliseum, interesting stuff about it. It's part of a complex of 8 different venues, so they rattled off the different venues, and one of them they said is a museum, and I was like, well, what museum is it? Unfortunately, it wasn't that exciting, but do you want to take a guess?
Is it the WCW museum?
No, is there such a thing?
No, but if there was, that
would be there.
It would be there. Or
I know what you said.
In the CNN Center, I guess, in Atlanta.
Is the ACC Hall of Champions?
Oh, okay.
Is any school in Greensboro even in the ACC anymore?
I don't know of any schools in Greensboro, but
I'm sure there's like a UNC Greensboro, but they would not be.
Yeah,
in
but
ACC.
North Carolina, Duke, Virginia.
I think Notre Dame in the ACC for basketball.
For basketball. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's kind of like
it's around
in the middle of a lot of them.
So they just kind of decided.
So it's kind of like a central point.
But that's like the Richfield Coliseum problem, though. It's like you're really not serving any of your markets. You're just floating out.
Well, I'm sure, there's probably North Carolina and Duke fans that live in Greensboro.
Right,
so
that's true.
They could go there. And yeah, I don't know how far... It is from those two schools. I know they're very close together.
Right.
Raleigh and Durham. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Anyways, that's...
So, for me, I have this, 9.8 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be in my top 25, I think. Like I said, best Survivor Series match. And, I mean, for one thing, the last 10 minutes is Austin Rock.
Right.
As I've already said, those two together are always going to be high for me no matter what situation is. So, yeah, I think it's deserving of its place.
Good.
And next we go to 2003.
Yep. American Airlines Arena in Dallas. Yes. There's a weird starting thing between Eric Bischoff and Mark Cuban because it's Dallas. So
because it's Dallas, so
you need Mark Cuban.
Eric Bischoff comes out and yells at Mark Cuban, and then Randy Orton, who had just started his Legend Killer phase, comes out and gives an RKO to Mark Cuban and claims that he killed the legend of Mark Cuban, or killed legendary owner Mark Cuban, who that might be.
That's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, well.
I mean, even now, I say he's even more popular now with Shark Tank.
And right, yeah.
All his other
shows. Yeah, right now he's just kind of like the loudmouth owner of the Mavericks.
Was he really like a personality back then? I don't know.
He kind of, yeah, in the early 2000s, like in sports, he definitely was.
Oh, okay.
No, like.
Which is why when I was.
Someone, you know, like, I didn't follow the NBA that closely by that point, but I knew who he was.
Okay.
He'd have articles in Sports Illustrated and stuff written about him.
They made kind of the hot young thing.
Yeah. Yeah. He was kind of a known person.
Gotcha.
So the reason behind this, Steve Austin retired at WrestleMania 19.
That's right.
In March. And Eric Bischoff fired him, but then they hired Steve Austin back as the co-GM with Eric Bischoff. So they were.
Very interesting HR policies.
It's a mess. And the person who did that is now part of the head of the small business.
Oh yeah.
Cabinet. Well, actually, she's off of that now.
Oh, she is.
And she's like one of the heads of the re-election campaign.
Oh, great.
But anyways,
let's not get into that topic. Yeah.
And so, anyways, so Steve Austin is hired. So him and Eric Bischoff are co-running Raw at the time. But then Steve Austin has a problem where he likes to stun everyone. And
it's a problem?
According to Linda McMahon, Steve, you can't just go around and kicking everybody's ass. So they pass a law that he can't do anything.
They pass a law.
Well, they pass a rule, a law, an amendment, I don't know, that Steve Austin can't attack anyone unless he's physically provoked.
It sounds like you're like on the playground and like you're arguing with your friends. And you just keep making up rules as you go along.
Yeah, well, that's kind of, I mean, they write a show every week, so
that's
gotta,
true.
So a couple
they
of
yeah, kind of just making a couple up of the
heels, mainly like Chris Jericho's the main heel, like that would always like try and goad Austin into attacking him, and Austin couldn't do it because he knew. So they make up this match where it's Team Bischoff, which is Chris Jericho, Christian, Mark Henry, Randy Orton and Scott Steiner against Team Austin, which is Booker T, the Dudley Boys, Rob Van Dam, and Shawn Michaels.
That's right. It was Team Austin, but Austin wasn't fighting.
Right. He wasn't fighting. And Team Bischoff, obviously, Eric Bischoff
right.
isn't wrestling.
No.
And if Team Bischoff won, Steve Austin was fired. And if Team Austin won, the amendment about him being able to attack
stun
anyone
people.
Unprovoked was waived, so he could just beat the hell out of it. They said we could get the old Stone Cold back, which meant he just attacked everyone. So the match starts, and it's pretty. I think this is one kind of like the 2001 one, but even more so. Like it's fine to start, and then once it gets down to three
exactly.
on one, is
yeah.
when it really.
And I think
ups
I made a
friend.
Comment to you that one Shawn Michaels is worth three.
Right.
Edges and Christians and who there was
well, well
Chris
Jericho.
Jericho,
Randy Orton and Christian. Those are
right. Christian kind of.
Yeah. But. I mean at this point he had just lost the Intercontinental title. So he was still kind of
yeah, but this one in the 2014, it was almost like the same thing. It's like you got down to three on one and then you know the three isn't gonna win. You know there's gonna be a little bit more.
Well the three ended up winning.
Well, I mean, it wasn't like
it wasn't going to be all
three
of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's
well,
what
yeah.
I meant. That's what I meant.
You yeah, know, but I mean,
all three of them.
I think it kind of shows, though, like how yeah, that's a lazy trope, but it's an effective trope also.
Right, the underdog.
Yeah, the underdog coming back from behind, and this one, it's so right away. Jericho throws Michaels into the post, and he's not only is he down three
he
by one,
really
he is
bloody.
He really cut himself.
Yeah,
deep.
I didn't care for that.
He is, yeah. So he's busted open, and then especially it works with Shawn Michaels. I think, better than anyone, because his move, the super kick, just could come out of nowhere. Right. And like, I think on both times he hits it, he just like falls on top of the guy and gets the win, eliminates and, Christian, and then Chris
bleeds
Jericho.
Bleeds all over everybody.
He bleeds all over everyone.
That's his finisher.
Yeah, that's his finisher. They all bleed just all over
get,
you.
Get blood.
It's okay though. He was reformed at this point, so it's not like he had to worry about any
Isn't
sort
the,
of
the Jesus fish.
In the pre-match, in the video package they show, he has the Jesus fish, and then when he comes out, he's just wearing a straight up crucifix that says HBK.
Crucifix or a cross?
Well, a cross.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
The shirt is a cross.
Gotcha. That says HBK. Across from where?
Yes. Across from the back of his shirt.
Okay. Nah. But yeah, this though, I didn't like the ending. There was
A lot of people. Yeah,
a lot of shenanigans. This is when Batista like shows up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So I didn't like understand. Once again, not having the same amount of context as you.
So
I was just kind
of
like,
this
what?
Time it was the very start of Evolution, which was the group of Triple H, Ric Flair, Orton, and Batista.
As we saw, one of these is not like the other, with Ric Flair being about.
Well, he was like the manager.
Gotcha. Oh, that makes more sense.
I mean, he wrestled also, but he was more so the manager. And it was like Triple H was the present, Ric Flair was the past, and Batista and Orton were the future. They kind
gotcha.
Of Evolution.
Oh, okay.
They had a great Motorhead song.
Really?
Yeah. Well, Motorhead's great at wrestling.
I'll have
wrestling
to.
Theme songs.
Oh, I'm sure I've heard it, but.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Motorhead fan.
Well, you'd be surprised. And then, so that was kind of like, and Batista had, they started the group in January, and then both Orton and Batista got injured. Probably because they were a little chemically enhanced to the gills.
Yeah, a little chemically enhanced.
And so this was really Batista's like comeback, where he like kind of put himself back on the map, and Orton had come back and had started doing his Legend Killer gimmick, which would eventually lead to him becoming like
right
a made man.
And one of those memes come out of him with his RKO.
RKO out of nowhere. I think it was like 2014 or 13.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because I remember watching him in St. Louis with your brother.
Oh, okay.
So that was 14. And that's kind of, we'll get to it in a bit, 2014 Survivor Series. I thought it was stupid that they didn't have Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton at the time, because it was in St. Louis, which is where Orton's from.
Mm.
And it was probably like as well-known main cult, like, it was like on SportsCenter and stuff. Like
really?
The RKO out of nowhere memes. So I think that would have been that was a missed step. But anyways, so this one, I have this at 9.5.
Okay.
I think it'll be like 30, 40s, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I didn't have a ton of notes on it, but I did enjoy it. I did kind of do a little bit of. So the American Airlines Arena.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yes. I guess when I'm going to get this wrong, so I'm just going to refresh myself. So they installed the wrong glass in the bathrooms when it first opened. So the exterior walls, the glass is too see-through. So
people driving down.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the stalls, just the bathroom. But it said many who drove by the arena complained that they had a clear view into the restrooms. So that's not. I don't know why no one noticed that when there are.
Yeah.
It. But I guess no one's in the building, and if you're using the glass that you think you're supposed to use.
But why would you have glass that's even, like, semi-transparent for the bathroom?
That's like it's natural light. I don't know.
Yeah.
So
in the bathroom?
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
I could see it, like, in the main
hallways. Yeah, I'm guessing, like, arenas that I'm familiar with. I've never really thought about the bathroom positioning, but it's usually among, like, the interior walls.
Yeah, thinking of, like, the United States.
Like, all the arenas in Chicago or the ones that I've been to, it's always been on the interior, not the exterior walls.
Right,
but
or at the very least, there's, like, ramps next, like, I'm thinking of where the Sox play, and the bathrooms, like, kind of face out, but there's a huge concrete ramp and stuff between that and... Well, you can't even see traffic from the stadium, but
there's parking lots. You'll be flashing all over in the White Sox bathrooms.
Well, yes.
But they fixed it.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. And American Airlines has the naming rights to two arenas. There's the one in Miami.
Miami, right?
Yeah. And I think it was the Mavericks were playing the Heat one year in the NBA Finals.
The first year of
it was 2007.
No, 2010 or 11.
So is the American Airlines series. That's not very interesting. But that's what it was called. It's true. It's a not a fun fact. It's a fact.
And before we go on, we're going to take a quick pause to just remind you of all the great shows on the PTBN Wrestling feed. Plenty of great content for you on both of our podcast feeds here at Place to Be Nation.
We have plenty of great content for you right here on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, including
the Place to Be podcast, the mothership of the PTBN, where co-hosts JT Rosero and Scott Criscolo take you chronologically through the history of WWE.
PTBN Main Event with hosts Scott Criscolo, Nate Milton, and Steve Weil, breaking down all the current events in the world of wrestling.
The Wrestling War Zone podcast, looking at the Monday Night Wars, brought to you by JT Rosero and Chad Campbell.
Row One, Seat One, an interesting look inside the world of small-time wrestling and beyond, small-town wrestling, excuse me, and beyond, with host Ben Zanny welcoming in a variety of guests each week.
Then we have Talkin' WCW heads to center stage, where Tim Cable, Greg Phillips, and Jennifer Smith look at the legendary promotion from WCW, looking at certain wrestlers and three of their matches each edition.
I think it combined. Extreme Three-Way Dance takes you back on a trek through the land of extreme with JT Rosero, John D'Amato, and Jennifer Smith.
Body Press Your Luck, a brand new wrestling game trivia show hosted by JT Rosero and Jordan Duncan.
With This Ring, in which husband and wife Ryan and Cindy Everett discuss specific matches in their respective fandoms.
We probably don't have to read that part.
That's nice. That's us.
You Don't Know Billy Jack, where Drew Wardlaw and his friend Jordan watch and discuss some of the greatest pro wrestling matches of all time through the eyes of a non-wrestling fan. Search for a universal connection and pro wrestling storytelling. Kind of
familiar, yeah. Plus, monthly WWE pay-per-view reaction shows and semi-regular shows like Jenny and the Gems, No Holds Barred, Adam's Division, Special Relations, and Jeff Learns Wrestling.
Also, be sure to check out the PTBN Pop Feed, littered with great content, offering tremendous shows like The Hard Traveling Fanboys, The Year in Pop, Laugh in Theater, DC4U, Marvel Age, The Brother and Sister Rewatch Podcast, and much more. Subscribe today.
And while you're at it, subscribe to Jennifer Smith's The Jenny Position feed as well, as it is the new home of Geek and Sassy, Talk and Pop, Freak Out Driving, Telling Stories, MCU Journey, the Infinity, and more.
And on our social media pages, make sure you look at the Greatest Sitcom of All Time tournament is now underway. We are in round one. There will be four matchups per day, so make sure to like our tournament on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. You don't want to miss a single one. Or actually just sign up on both so you could vote two times for your favorite show.
Is that what you've been doing?
Yes. Yeah.
What show have you been voting for?
Well, I mean...
Oh, each round.
Each round is a different show.
Yes, I've been noticing that as well. And we have officially kicked off our 2020 stretch project, determining the greatest WCW match ever. Oh, you have all year to do research, promote matches, and build your list. Conversation rules can be found at www.facebook.com/GWCW matches or on the Pro Wrestling Only message board.
And coming later this year, that is how With This Ring will continue. We will eventually turn it into WCW matches and hope you enjoy that. And thank you very much. And let's go on with the show. Next, we go to 2014 in St. Louis at the Scott Trade Center. And it is, again, a Survivor match with big implications.
Oh, yeah? What are the stakes here?
Well... Actually, I don't remember what it was for the other. Okay, I do. So it was Team Cena versus Team Authority, which is Triple H and Stephanie, and of course they're not in the match.
Oh yeah, they just kind of were pouting on the sidelines.
Yeah, which really, I mean, Triple H's own fault. Like he puts Kane on the team, and Mark Henry on the team, but not himself.
Yeah, I think he could have done a better job than Kane.
Yeah.
And Mark Henry was eliminated, like, how many seconds in?
46 seconds, officially.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, Team Cena, the stipulation was if they lost, everyone but John Cena would get fired. Because the Authority, like, in a smart little...
There's so many elaborate rules. Well,
but no, it made sense because Triple H and Stephanie were like, we're not going to fire you, John, because you make money for us.
Oh, it's everyone else.
And that's kind of like what, even in like 98 when it was Austin versus McMahon, Austin or McMahon would point out like, I'm not going to fire Steve Austin because he makes me money, but I'm not going to, I don't want him to be champion.
Right.
So it's always kind of like, it's always good when they, I mean, they've overused heel authority people way too much.
Well,
but it's good when they at least give internal logic to why, if they're feuding with someone, why they don't just fire them.
Right. Yeah, you need logical consistency.
Right. Like, it makes sense if they, at least in a throwaway line, be like, you sell a lot of t-shirts, so I'm not going to fire you, but I'm going to have you be the opening match every show.
Yeah.
So Team Cena is The Big Show, Dolph Ziggler, Eric Rowan in by far his highest profile role ever, John Cena and Ryback, another guy who's getting pushed very highly here, versus Team Authority, which is Kane, Luke Harper, Mark Henry, Rusev, and Seth Rollins.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Team Authority has with them Jamie Noble, Joey Mercury, J&J Security.
Right, yes.
Lana.
I knew their first names.
Stephanie McMahon and Triple H.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in this one, too.
Yes, a lot of people around.
People around.
I was a big fan of the very beginning where Mark Henry charges in and Big Show just punches him and
that was it. Yeah, there's a lot of choke slams, kind of that one point. Not a lot of, and all these moves, this one I did write, not a lot of aerial moves. I think all the big guys,
I think kind
pretty
of
grounded.
Seth Rollins is kind of like the only
one getting up there.
And then Rusev does my favorite move in wrestling, the fat guy running across multiple announce tables and splashing into no one.
That is your favorite move.
To just eliminate himself. He gets counted out because of that. And a kind of a weird move.
This was weird, yeah.
It's 3-on-3, and Big Show decides...
I'm out.
It's looking very bad, and just punches John Cena to eliminate him, and then walks out himself to eliminate himself, and it becomes 3-on-1.
With Dolph Ziggler.
Dolph Ziggler against...
And they kind of explained it, because basically Big Show would have lost his job if team lost.
Yeah,
so they thinly explained it.
They did, but it's kind of like, why did... Because he gets eliminated... why did he go through with the match for 25 minutes? Right. And it was when they're tied 3-3. It's not like...
Well, they're waiting for the highest drama moment to do it.
True. Yeah, I mean, I know why they did it
yeah.
But the way they did it seems kind of odd. And then, so Dolph Ziggler fights his hardest and is able to eliminate Kane because Kane's like 45 here and sucks.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's...
Then gets the flash pin on Luke Harper. And then him and Seth Rollins are going at it. The referee gets knocked out, of course.
Mm-hmm. And this is another thing where it was like 3-on-1. I'm like, okay, Dolph Ziggler is going to hang in a little bit longer.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, you knew it wasn't just going to be Kane comes in, choke slams him, and that's the end of the match.
Right. I would be very disappointed.
I think most people would be. And then Triple H comes out and comes in the ring and hits the pedigree on Seth Rollins and then calls out his own personal referee. Count three, and the lights go out, and to someone like you, Sting's music hit, and that meant?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I know. I wrote in my notes, Ryan says this is a big deal, because a guy showed up. It wasn't Sting from the band.
No.
It wasn't Sting from the Police.
No, it was not.
Had a lot of face paint on. And
it was, so actually.
What was your reaction when you saw it the first time?
I kind of knew something was going to happen, and... He had just been announced as being, like, the secret guy in the video game that year. And that's when that started being, like, a way to figure out what guy is going to come back soon. Like, the year before was the Ultimate Warrior, and then he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. This year it was Sting, and Ultimate Warrior and Sting actually broke in together as a tag team.
Oh.
And then they went their separate ways, but even, like, in the late 80s, early 90s, Sting... was basically the Ultimate Warrior in WCW.
Like, gotcha.
Yeah, muscled up, face paint. At the time, he had like a blonde crew cut.
Oh, I'm going to look at picture. I'm going to look up a picture of him.
Yeah, put Sting like.
I don't think I've ever. I can't really picture him. I honestly don't think I've ever seen him wrestle in a match.
Because Sting from like 1997 on is like the Crow Sting, but.
Yeah, all the images. Oh, he's from Omaha, Nebraska.
Huh? Yeah, like this.
Oh, it's a video. Oh, he looks kind of familiar.
Yeah, I'm sure he was on probably in the background of a match. Because I watched a lot of him versus Vader after Vader died.
No.
So maybe you were in the
Is
room for one of those.
potentially. Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's still alive. He's still showing. I think actually,
That flat top's pretty
I think he
impressive.
has a meet and greet in the Hyatt in Rosemont tomorrow, actually.
Oh,
I don't think
interesting.
we'll be able to make it, but if you
Yeah.
really wanted to meet Sting.
I really don't need to. But I'm sure he'll draw a good crowd.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, especially like, because I think this will be a big weekend for them in Chicago, and there's a
Yeah,
lot
it's
of
a lot of
ancillary
shows.
things going on.
Yeah. I didn't write down the name of the company, but I was telling you one time when I was looking up all the facts for these arenas that every time I go, would Google Scottrade or Dallas American Airlines, it's the same name, but a lot of almost all of them have changed names over the years. So before they were called Scottrade, they were the naming rights were bought by some like sexy internet startup in 2000. So of course, rather than paying the St. Louis Blues in cash, what did they pay them in?
Bitcoin
No.
stock,
Bitcoin would be the 2019 version of
right?
this story. The 2000 story was, yes, they paid in stock that was worth $9 at the time. What happened a year later to that stock?
It went to like $2.
65 cents.
Okay, so that was
And
not
the
a
St. Louis
great.
Blues lost about $700,000 in that deal. Ended
Yep, that
up.
sounds about right.
So yeah, very much a story for a very much in the zeitgeist of the early 2000s tech
Yes.
bubble, giving everyone stock and then basically being worth nothing, next to
It going
nothing. So they
downhill.
renegotiated and became the Scottrade Arena in 2006.
Yes. But now they're Enterprise, correct?
Enterprise Arena, yeah.
Gotcha.
So I'm not quite sure how those contracts are structured, but they seem to kind
Yeah,
of keep upping it
fluctuate.
every year. Yeah.
And then we had actually been at the Scottrade Center about a month
Yeah,
prior
before
to this
this,
for
yeah,
a
for the.
Hawks Blues game.
Oh, yeah, I remember it being nice.
It was,
Decent
yeah, it
arena.
was fine. I mean,
We have a
most
very
arenas
weak
are
one.
kind of just what they are. Like, that kind of arena is pretty ho-hum, I think. Like, you notice the bad ones and the good ones, but the medium
Right. Kind of
ones,
all kind of blend
yeah.
together.
So that's it for our Survivor Series matches. And this one I would put pretty much on par with the 2003 one, I think.
Okay, yeah.
They'll probably be within like 5 spots of each other when I realize I gotta rank those two Survivor Series matches. I'll kind of both put them in and then see what's around them if I'm
Might
gonna
have
separate them too much.
right. I don't. Yeah, I liked this one a lot, actually. I thought it was good action, good pace, no blood, which
Yes,
I
yeah, no blood for
appreciate.
you.
No like craziness at the end.
And then our last match, we went to
Back to
NXT,
Houston.
back to Houston, but not at the Astrodome.
Nope, at the Toyota Center.
For some reason, the internet is not working. Wikipedia is not working. That's all right, though. So it
You
was.
can know enough of this from memory.
Yeah, so it was the first ever War Games match in WWE under the NXT banner, and
So there were War Games before, it's not at NXT
no,
or.
there were War Games in WCW,
Oh,
never
that's
in
right, that's right.
WWF.
We talked about this, like how Paul Ellery was a part of War
Right,
Games.
yeah. So like there had been for like th since the last takeover right before SummerSlam, there had been like this group of 10 guys, well, 9 guys, always feuding like 3 shows in a row. And NXT just ended with these guys feuding. So eventually, William Regal got pissed off, came out, and said, like, we're
Oh.
gonna face each other, and it's gonna be War Games. And it just like showed up on the back Titantron, and the crowd went crazy. And so with War Games, the big thing is 2 rings,
Yep.
one cage covering
It's
both of them.
always 2 rings, right? All war
Yes.
games? Okay.
And then so usually it's 2 teams of 4 or 5, depending on the feud itself, basically.
Gotcha.
And 2 guys start out. There's a coin toss, which the heels always win. Guy from the heel team goes in. Usually 2 minutes passes. Another guy for the face team comes in, and they alternate in and out until all the guys are in, and then the match beyond begins.
It's called the
The
Match
match
Beyond.
beyond. And then, why? Because that's the match beyond the first half of the match. And that's when
you can start winning.
You could win. In WCW, it was only submission.
Oh, okay.
But then WWE changed it to pinfall or submission, which I think actually kind of works a little better just because a lot of guys don't have a submission move. And, like, it kind of.
Sometimes it was kind of. I didn't think of that. Yeah.
Sometimes it was kind of pinfall. Like.
Oh, like, very good.
Sometimes in WCW, they would just do where they would just be beating the shit out of the guy until he finally, like, called
it. Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's not as dramatic.
Yeah. So here it's the Undisputed Era of Adam Cole.
Bebe.
Thank you. Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish against the Authors of Pain and Roderick Strong.
Did they not have enough, like, trios that kind of take kind these of,
yeah, like, duos Roderick Strong had been feuding with the Undisputed Era because they were all kind of like the same. They were in Ring of Honor, which was like a smaller promotion, and had been together then. So they kind of just made it seem like, well, obviously Roderick Strong is going to join them. But then he went against them, and the Authors of Pain had a feud with them because they cost them the tag titles. So it was kind of like just the enemy of my enemy.
Gotcha, yeah.
And then against Sanity.
That's right.
Eric Young, Killian Dayton.
Oh, I had Insanity. There's Sanity?
Just Sanity.
But they're not sane.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of the thing, I guess.
I think it makes more sense to call it Insanity. I'm going to leave it in my notes as Insanity.
And
it doesn't
matter
anyways.
Of all the guys in it, Killian Dayton, the big fat guy.
He did the best job.
I think he was, yeah I would say he was the standout performer.
Absolutely.
Of the match.
The chubby guy in the kilt.
Yep. He was all
I
over the place.
With that. Yeah.
He does a coast-to-coast dropkick from one side of the ring to
that's
the other.
That's right, yeah.
And he's the guy who really
tosses both of them off of him.
Yeah. And he's the guy who also, like, kind of started, like, just started throwing all the weapons in the ring.
Yep. There was a lot of junk in the ring. There was chairs, tables, there's some chains, a garbage can.
I think
a kendo stick showed
up. Yeah, kendo sticks. Alexander Wolf was the other Sanity guy. He came in with a nightstick in his
coat. That's right,
coat.
Yeah.
And eventually he got, I think he gives a superplex, he gives a German suplex off the top through a table and,
right,
like, takes a divot out the top of his head.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, that was bad.
Yeah, even, like, 5 minutes later, you see the table.
It's
and it's
a
just
huge,
huge pool of blood on
ugh,
it.
Yeah.
And, of course, they had made the extra rule that if you left the ring, your team would forfeit. So this poor guy couldn't even leave. He's in the one ring while everyone else is in the other ring going at
the
it.
Doctor's
and
trying
the doctor's, like, trying to fix him up through the cage.
That was pretty funny.
Which
yeah.
is just sometimes
so
you
is that
do
still
that.
A rule now? You can't leave the cage for
so.
Medical reasons? Did they
no,
get rid
I
of
think
that rule?
They wouldn't do that. Because it kind of is hard. Because there's the one door only.
Right.
So you'd have to have either the cage go up, which wouldn't work. Or
you could have shibbied over the top.
Yeah.
But I guess if you're bleeding, you don't want to.
Which is also kind of a thing that, like, I know why they have the top off the cage, but in the actual War Games matches, there was always a cage on top.
Oh, okay.
But here, like,
there's an open.
There was an opening because they do the superplex off the top.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
I was like, I cannot believe that Adam Cole did that. I was, like, cringing watching him do that.
I mean, he does it on everyone, though, so it's a pretty safe.
Still, would you do that?
No, I mean, I'm very unathletic, though. The next, at the 2000.
Who would you just jump off a cliff that height?
If it was at a safe landing, yeah.
Really?
Like, I've jumped off my garage on the snow.
That's true. I mean, I think it's higher than your garage.
Yeah.
Definitely higher than your garage.
Well, to the top of the cage to the ring, though, I don't know.
That's true.
I mean, they always say it's a 15-foot high cage, but it's probably like...
They exaggerate.
From the top, from the bottom of the ring, from the ring level to the top of the cage is probably about 10 feet, maybe.
Still pretty high.
It's high, yeah. And it's.
I mean, I'm looking at the, like, our floor.
You're not falling
ceiling.
Onto snow.
Right. I'm looking at our floor to ceiling height now, and yeah.
Yeah.
I still wouldn't do it. I still.
This is only
impressed.
Like 8 feet. Or no, it's probably 10.
This is probably 10 foot.
Yeah.
It's so, a thrilling conversation about the height
of our
yeah, walls.
This is always great for a an audio medium.
Right.
But, well, like, at the last year's War Games, Ricochet does a dive, like, by himself, like, onto most of the crowd also.
Yeah, that's...
Of people.
Yeah. Really taking a lot of risks there.
Yes, but. Yes. So in the very end, it kind of breaks down into... So the one thing, the thing here, like, with the... Each team goes in at a time. I didn't like that. I like it more when it's one, from each. One.
Yeah.
Because then, like...
Ah, this, like, sped it up a little bit.
It did, yeah.
Kept it moving.
Yeah, it does keep it moving.
But, yeah, it was an interesting concept how...
Yeah, like, really, the Undisputed Era should have just won because they had three guys in there to start, so they should have been able to take everyone out as they came in. But, of course, that never
works. That sounds good in theory.
Yeah.
Yeah. But actually, and this is one arena that still had the same name. I didn't get redirected to another Wikipedia page. It's where the Rockets play.
Okay. Yeah.
And for whatever reason, it didn't really, once again, not a lot of, Wikipedia doesn't really explain everything, and I didn't have time to look at the source. But the Rockets owner didn't want to have people walk up to their seats. Like, usually every arena you go in, you have to go up a big ramp or a big elevator. So this is one of the arenas that are sunk into the ground, so people can just walk. That's onto the streets. Cool. So it's 32 feet below sea level is where it starts.
Wow.
And they had to excavate over 30,000 cubic yards of dirt, basically to build like an arena-shaped hole in the ground.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah, I got you.
If you're going to sink a 20,000-person arena, just, you know, amount of
that makes sense,
area it has to displace. Yeah, so.
It's kind of cool. The
big house is like that in Michigan.
I know
that's the only one
it's gone now. But the ballpark in Arlington, I think, where the Rangers played was kind of like
it's
that.
Like a sunk, really?
I think it was kind, or maybe the new one. No, I think the new one that they're building
is going to be a sunken one.
It's going to be sunken because the reason they're building a new one is because it's so friggin' hot, but they're still not making it a dome, which is so stupid.
Yeah, that's.
It's going to be hot in Dallas in the summer, no matter
how high,
how low you are.
Being that much further away from the sun isn't going to make a difference. Yeah.
Building a big glass roof would do it, but no, we can't do that.
Yeah. I don't know. But I liked this one. I'm kind of glad we watched this one. So now when we go to War Games tomorrow.
Yes, I would agree.
A little bit of more context than just being thrown
in. And I think that's kind of, I mean, I gave this a 9.7.
Oh, okay.
But I think I'm going to hold off saying where it will go until I watch tomorrow's. Because
you think that's going to be that good?
Well, no, I just think it's good to really rank it. You got to see how it ranks against the other War Games matches. I think it's better than last year's, because last year's was like 50 minutes. It's just too long.
Oh, that is really long. Like 50, they have 5-0.
Yeah, like they have all the. It's eight guys, so it's, and they do it. It's 4-on-4, so 5 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes. So like at 28 minutes or so, everyone's in. Then it goes like another 20 minutes almost, which is too long.
Yeah,
like in WCW when they did it, it would always end like within 5 minutes of everyone being in.
A little gassy there?
A little bit. Because it was kind of like, oh, it's such a brutal match that once everyone's in, it's like almost over.
Gotcha.
And that's kind of, I think, where NXT sometimes they have their matches go a little too long and kind of try to make it too epic.
Gotcha.
When it doesn't need to be. But yeah, I think this was a really good first shot at it. And it's very much WWE making it their own type of match at the same time as paying homage to
the old format.
The old format.
Yeah, so. WCW. Well, yeah, they mentioned that a couple times that Paul Ellery was in the first War Games.
In the first one. And they show Goldust and Arn Anderson before the match starts.
Right, yeah.
And Dusty Rhodes obviously created it. So.
Oh, obviously. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, he like created
it. How are you supposed to know?
I don't know. I just.
Obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
Duh. Everyone
he
knows
created,
that.
He created like everything in WCW, basically.
Okay, well,
like,
a lot of people don't know what you know at WCW. A lot of people don't even know what WCW is, so.
Well, I can't help those people.
Not people listening to this podcast, yes. Obviously, but the world at large.
Yes. Well, they're at a loss for that. Okay, so these five matches, how would you
I was just doing that,
them?
You could probably tell. I think my least favorite's probably the first one.
Okay.
Just didn't really relate to a lot of the
guys
and the format, just kind of still working the kinks out. After that, I have to put the bloody one.
The 03?
Yeah, the 03 one, just because I don't like all the blood. I thought Batista showing up, once again, not really knowing the whole story, but even if I did, like, I thought that was I don't like that kind of BS ending where one person who wasn't even involved in the match comes out and medals.
Although the one thing I do have to add to that, I did like, why it will actually be a little above 14, is I like the aftermath where Austin comes out and Shawn Michaels is like all bloody and sorrowful, and Austin just like pats him on the back, which is something he actually shows compassion, mercy, which he never does. And then he drinks beer and stuns the coach and
that's right, that was the
security
one.
Team. But I think it was good to show like Steve Austin like having compassion and growing as a character.
And then I don't know, the other three I think were all pretty close. What did I have? So I think the number three I put War Games. Not because I didn't dislike it.
Yeah, just but out of those three.
Yeah, out of those three I put War Games. The second one, the Greensboro Coliseum one. I liked Paul Heyman's commentary. Shane was a little much, but I liked that one. And then I definitely think the Scott Trade Arena one was my favorite.
Yeah, it was really good.
It was really good. Although Big Show taking himself out was a little weird. But you're kind of right. I think I definitely got more interested when it got down to Ziggler.
Right.
Versus
and just that it was
Kane
Ziggler.
Rollins
because, like,
yeah,
if
like
you
had
asked me before, I was like, who are going to be the last two guys? Oh, John Cena and Seth Rollins.
Right.
But they actually changed it up that way.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
Like, having Big Show eliminate Cena was so much better than having him eliminate Ziggler.
Right. So that's my order.
And then we actually... less than a week later, saw Dolph Ziggler drop the puck at the Lake Erie Monsters game.
Yep,
the minor league Cleveland hockey team.
Actually, I don't think we're going to go to a game this year.
That's all right. I don't know if Dolph Ziggler would be involved. So.
Really? Is he too popular now?
No, he probably would be. But
if he was home, they would call him up and he would go do it.
It'll be either him or the Miz.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Whoever's home for Thanksgiving gets to drop the puck.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
Yes, that was always a big selling point on getting me to come to Cleveland
hockey
for Thanksgiving.
Seems all Dolph Ziggler for
yes,
2 minutes.
Exactly.
Okay. So, good. This was a good week.
So you like Survivor Series?
I don't know if I need to watch it in excess, but I appreciate it now, I guess.
Okay.
Like I said, I think I'm glad we watched it leading up to it. So for War Games, we kind of know what to think going in.
Growth. Yeah.
But yeah, and like I said, this is definitely the paper or main event that I had the least exposure to.
Yeah.
So.
And next, we're going to do, kind of going back on what we did beforehand, we're going to do WrestleMania.
Before and afters?
Yeah. So now we'll do WrestleMania matches, and then the next week we'll do their rematches.
Oh.
So it'll be the flip of that, which
will
kind of be the flip on the more famous match will come first.
The more famous, but is it the better match?
Is it the better? Well, I'll give you a spoiler that my number one match is one of the matches we'll be watching in the next
week.
Now
I'll have to try and guess and see which one it is. So.
All right. And
all right.
Will you continue to take this ring with me and continue this journey?
Yes, I will.
All right. Sounds great. All right, thank you very much. We'll see you next time.
Hi.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place Three Nations, JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceThreeNations.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place Three Nations Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place Three Nations Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceThreeNations.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceThreeNations.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaySpedition.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.